Rebel Author Podcast, where we talk about books, business, and occasionally bad words. Hello, Rebels, and welcome to episode 233 of the Rebel Author Podcast. Today, I've got returning guest Claire Taylor, and we are talking all about the Enneagram and your creativity and blocks that you may experience in your writing and business and how the Enneagram can help. And I have one or two epiphanies during this episode. It's one of those. To last week's questions, which were on Anthea's episode, Matt Goodall said, "This was a superb episode. Great to hear the details and ideas of how to make all the things come together. I had the same concerns over stretch goals too. Thank you to you both." And then a Mac descendant said, "Your excitement about Kickstarter is a joy to listen to. Almost as good as the joy and energy you were radiating at the PWA Romance Writers Week. By the way, I've listened to your presentation every day since it aired. It is that good." Oh, that's so lovely. Thank you so much. Okay, so in personal news then and updates, it is Wednesday the 6th of March as I record this, and I am off to 20 Books Seville tomorrow morning after the school run, and I am going to be there until Saturday evening when I will fly home, and then it's my birthday on Sunday, and then I'm in London Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, so I will be recording the next podcast on Thursday the 14th of March. So a little bit of time, basically the whole next week out of the office. I won't be doing any work, so I don't really have an update because I'm just not going to be here. I'm speaking in Seville. I'm speaking in London on Monday and Wednesday, and Tuesday I'm spending the day with Chloe in London, a little birthday celebration. So that will be fun. And then in terms of stuff that I have been working on, it is mostly the fulfillment of the Kickstarter. So I've been making boxes and ordering bits and all of the rest of it. It is surprising how much work there is still to do after you finish the Kickstarter. I think I'm going to have to make myself a little template. And then the other thing I've been doing is struggling to outline, and I didn't understand why or what was going on. So I had coaching yesterday, and as always, everybody fucking drink. Clifton Strengths Coaching saves the day once again. And basically, as you guys will have heard on various episodes by now, I think I hit six figures. And that has been a goal that I have been striving towards for basically my entire life. And, you know, as a number one competition, that was the race, right? The finish line was six figures. So once I passed that, I was like, now what? Well, this is what my brain or subconscious was saying, was basically like, oh, we're done now. What is the race? So essentially, the reason that I have been struggling with exhaustion and struggling with motivation and not wanting to do anything is because I didn't have a race. So last night I spoke to my coach, and we reset all of the goals. We reset all of the races, if you want, for a better word, you know, competitions that I'm racing myself against or whatever. And we set a goal, and she was like, oh, you don't believe that goal. And I was like, what do you mean? And she was like, well, you, energetically, like, you haven't changed, like, I can see you're not engaged, so we could set this as a goal, and but you're lying to yourself, and you're not gonna, like, it's not gonna help you get out of bed. And I was like, oh, okay. So she's like, what's the problem with the goal? And I was like, I don't know. And then I did know. The goal basically wasn't big enough, because I don't want short-term goals, I want long-term goals. I want goals that are hard to reach, because the harder it is to reach, there's this fine balance between what is too unachievable, like an Mount Everest of a goal, like seven figures, right? To go from 100 grand or 100 whatever it was to seven figures is a big fucking jump. But to have some goals in between that still feel bloody hard, but aren't so unrealistic. So it was about finding the right level of goal. And the minute we landed on the number, oh dear. Like, I kind of am not ready to admit the pettiness of this goal.
But listen, we all know that people did shit to me that, you know, in the past, and maybe I know what their salary is, and maybe I'm going to try and do a certain number more than that. Anyway, so we set the goals, and then we did good, better, best, and it was fucking instantaneous. Instantaneous. I didn't feel tired anymore. All my energy came back. I was super excited. So much fucking so that I could not go to sleep last night because I was so full of beans. Like, it was midnight before I went to sleep. And I've been going to sleep at like 9 o'clock because I've been so like, so essentially, what I have learned is that I must always have a race that I am in. And the minute I complete a race, I must know what the next race is, which is stupid because I know this because I've talked about the fact that, you know, when you run a marathon, you need to have another race. Otherwise, you like lose all of the blah, blah, blah. But I think I spent so long thinking I would never hit six figures that I didn't even entertain the possibility of a goal after it because that was it. That was all the goal because I just... I don't know. I guess I lacked the self-belief to believe that I could do it. So now that I have, I fully believe that I can reach the next goal, even though it's ridiculous and seems impossible, which is ironic or a juxtaposition or whatever you want to say. Anywho, I got my fucking mojo back and I am super excited and like, I've had virtually no sleep because my eyes pinged open. I was like, yeah, yeah, let's get back at the desk. Let's go. Hi guys, I'm back. Did you miss me? anyway, so that is basically my update. So it's not really an update, but it's like a, you know, personal insight into the psychological fuckery that is number one competition. Anywho, hope you enjoyed it. Okay, the rebel of the week this week is Melissa. Melissa says she was pursuing a business degree a little while ago, worked in a job placement agency writing resumes and doing sort of Y2K coding. The vice president of the department that she worked in was a jerk and had a really bad reputation for mistreating people. She was super open that as she was attending classes and working during the day and sometimes like requested time off for those activities. One day, she asked for time to do a professional development event at the school. Very clear that she was not taking part in the interviews, but wanted to attend the other sessions being offered. She told her boss that's exactly what she did. She attended, but didn't attend the interviews. A few weeks went by, and she received a call from somebody who said that they were starting the following week as the resume writer. She doesn't remember the official job title, but her boss had basically hired this person for her job. She had no plans to quit. Melissa was very confused when the lady was super forthcoming with her information about why she was hired. I assured her that there would be an ID and the access card for the parking garage upon her arrival, wished her a good day and hung up. I went home and told my boyfriend what had transpired and that I thought I was about to be fired and didn't know why. He told me I was to go to work the next day and quit. I argued that I didn't have another job to go to, so of course I couldn't just quit. It's important to note that my boyfriend was a police officer and the next morning he picked me up and drove me to work. He parked his patrol car fully on the sidewalk right in front of the door to the building where he said he would wait 10 minutes for me to go upstairs and quit or he would come up there and have a word with her boss. So I went upstairs and asked my boss about the young lady he'd hired and why. He said I thought I was going to quit because I went to the event at the college. I asked what that had to do with anything and that I hadn't interviewed for any jobs. He just shrugged and said because I went to the event, he assumed I wanted to quit. And obviously, I had no intention of quitting until that moment and handed him the parking pass and my ID. He accused me of being unprofessional and said I should stay and train the new girl. I told him that we had moved well beyond professional and walked out. 2 days later, a competitor hired me as a management consultant. He got fired shortly after and never worked in the industry again. I have never looked back and I'm an economic development manager and an author. Oh my God, I love that. I love that they got their comeuppance as well. That is fucking brilliant. Thank you so much. And okay, so listen, Becca has screamed at me. She hasn't screamed. She's such a lovely person. She would never scream. But I'm just going to pretend for the sake of the podcast and emphasising the importance of this. We are extremely low on Rebel stories. So if you have a Rebel story that you haven't sent in, please send it in. She's sort of underlined it and told me three times we are super low, low, low. So if you have sent one in and not heard it, please send it in again. If you have been sitting on a story, now is the time to send it. I really love these stories in the episode, so please, please, please let me continue reading them out. Okay, if you would like to be a Rebel of the Week, please do send in your story. It can be anything, something big, something small, or something in between. And you can send it to Becca over on rebelauthorpodcast@gmail.com. Welcome and thank you to upped pledges and new pledges, Melissa Suleri, oh, probably botched that, and Marie Hodgkinson. A big thank you to my existing patrons as well. If you would like to support the show and get early access to all of the episodes, as well as bonus content like the Slack community, where we have over 100 authors supporting each other every single day, the Rebel Challenges quarterly, our Poison and Prose question and answer writing sprint sessions, our movie nights, our masterclasses. So our next masterclass is going to be on voice after the one that's on getting to number one on Amazon bestseller. So you can do all of that from as little as $2 a month by visiting patreon.com/Sasha Black. That's enough from me this week. Let's get on with the episode. Hello and welcome to the Rebel Author Podcast. Today I am rejoined by Claire Taylor. Claire is the owner of FFS Media and the brain behind the Liberated Writer 5-week course. She publishes fiction under 4 pen names. As H. Claire Taylor, she publishes satire, including the Jessica Christ series and the Alice Luck Space Adventures. As Brock Bloodworth, she publishes the Killhaven Police Urban Fantasy series. As Nova Nelson, she publishes the Eastwind Witches Cozy Mystery series, the Ruby True Magical Mysteries, and the Dahlia Wilde's Magical Mysteries, all set in the same fictional town. And lastly, as Claire Feeney, she writes the Dana Capone, I hope I pronounced that right, Mysteries, a gritty crime fiction series set in the hometown, in her hometown of Austin, Texas. She fucking loves writing books. I love that little end. Hello and welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having me back. I'm excited.
Oh, I love it. We always have a good old chin wag. I'm excited for you to challenge me. Okay.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Well, you were last on episode 186, which was more just under a year ago in April 2023. So, like, usually I ask sort of people's journey and where they've how they've got to where they are, but instead, I'd love to know, like, what have you been up to in the last year?
Wow. Well, I have been launching my new Liberated Writer course, which is a 5-week course for authors who want to go like deep into deconstructing some of these patterns and find some new options in their writing and publishing as the patterns inside them start to shift. I've been really moving my attention towards helping authors focus more on sustainability because, of course, we have a changing industry. And, you know, there's all those Chicken Littles out there telling us the sky is falling. And so that can be very disruptive to our nervous system. And that can be very disruptive to our writing. So, yeah, that's been my mission. And then I've just been publishing my own books because it's fun.
Yeah, that is actually why we are here. Even though sometimes I think we get like, especially when you have like a two-pronged business and you have the author stuff and you have the fiction stuff, I think I sometimes forget and end up focusing too hard on one and then have to like veer the other way. Okay, well, I do recommend that everybody goes back and listens to episode 186 for like the basics. But for those who maybe don't like going back, we're here to talk about the Enneagram. And so before we dive into the new area that you're looking at in your Kickstarter, can you give everybody a brief basics? What is the Enneagram? Why do we need it? How is it useful for indie authors?
Right. Okay. So the Enneagram is a personality system Enya is 9, Graham is shape. So it's just these 9 types. It describes 9 core fears and core desires. So that's how the types are defined, based on what your core fear and core desire is. And so sometimes we call it a type, sometimes we call it a lens, sometimes we call it a style, right? There's these different approaches to it. But essentially, that's how we define these patterns of thinking, feeling, and behaving. They arise from our core fear and core desire. So these fears are things like being bad or corrupt or lacking value or being trapped in deprivation. They're not like a fear of mirrors or a fear of snakes or mascots, all of which I also have. So, you know, these are really getting down to those basic levels of being a human. And so the key concept is that your core fear and desire determine where most of your subconscious attention is flowing most of the time. And so that's important because it allows us to look at these patterns of thinking, feeling, and behaving that are our default. And they, you know, if we keep doing the same thing, we're going to keep feeling the same way. We're going to keep having the same beliefs. And those beliefs can be, they were usually defined for us, right? A lot of these patterns were things that we developed very early childhood as a way of just sort of getting by and processing the world. And we were pretty dumb as kids. We didn't know a whole lot of things. So it might be time to update. So we go into those patterns and we look at them and we hold them up one by one and go, does this make any sense? No, we could probably try something new.
Okay.
So that's basically what we're doing. And it's really useful for authors because, like, for example, if you're an 8, you're a challenger, your fear is autonomy and control. It's about your core fear and desire around autonomy and control. You don't want to be controlled or harmed, right? So that's fine. We don't need to change that. We couldn't if we tried, but sometimes it can become a problem if an offer of help from another author feels like an attempt at control, right? So we may have readers who are like, hey, can I help out? Where can I, you know, support you? And they may have these really good connections. They may have really good opportunities. But if our default patterns read an offer of help as that person is trying to get in and control and take over, then our default patterns will rule it out right away, right? So we've closed off these options. Or we'll just go, no, that's fine. I can do it myself, right? We won't even think about it. It'll just be so, you know, so obvious to us that like, no, we're not going to do that. So then, you know, the 8 may become an island as an author, and that can burn people out. So we want to say, okay, what opportunities are we misclassifying off the bat as our core fear? And where could we maybe reassess that and find some new opportunities for our career?
Okay, so I'm wearing a watch that's like a sports watch, and my heart rate is no longer at my normal resting.
I'm not a threat. I'm here to help you. And that's not trying to control you.
Oh, okay. No, it's fine. But I may struggle to ask for help at times. There may be times that I struggle to ask for help. Okay. So what's it? Oh, I'm so uncomfortable already. Why am I doing this to myself? Oh no, it's fine. I'm here to learn. Okay, so let me regroup myself. When we, oh my god, I am really uncomfortable. I'm sorry. Okay, so that completely explodes the podcast right off the bat. So it's, I just, nobody has ever framed help like that, so I'm already mildly uncomfortable. I mean, so what I find interesting is that I have therapy, I go to strengths coaching, so it's not like I don't ask for help. Well, that doesn't feel like asking for help, it feels like paying for service, which may be a way of me reframing it so that I'm comfortable with what I'm doing. But I mean, how. Because, like, there are times that I feel like other ways of asking for help are harder. Like, you know, I need help with this thing that I'm doing. But then going and having coaching doesn't feel like help. Can you just explain that?
Right.
That would be great.
Well, yeah. So there's a lot of things that feel like vulnerability to certain people and don't to other people. And to be fair, sometimes people do offer help because they feel like there'll be forced reciprocation on the other side, right? If I help you, then you have to help me, and that can kind of hang over you. So there are some times when an offer of help isn't just an offer of help. So I will give you that validation, but a lot of times
that has happened a lot to me as well. So it's probably reinforced.
Yeah. So that's, yes, that has thickened that armor and that has, you know, really reinforced that pattern of being like, oh no, no. If someone's just offering me help and I haven't asked for it or paid for it, I don't trust it.
Oh right? My God. I much prefer to pay because then I control it.
You can fire them.
Control it. Oh my God. That's why I pay for it. That's why I prefer to pay. Oh my God. This is, oh my God. I can't cope with this podcast.
You're actually handling it very well.
Really? Oh my God. Okay, so my heart rate now is an unhealthy. No, I'm kidding. Wow, that makes so much sense. I'm very comfortable with paying for services because, yeah, like you say, you have some level of control over it.
I get it too. I pay a therapist. I love it. I'm like, you actually have to take all of my crazy for the price that I'm paying you. And I don't feel bad about it at all. Yeah.
But it's like, it's even things like, you know, paying for an edit rather than swapping skills, or, you know, it's like even to the point like that, you know, and, yeah, this is so interesting. Oh,
I want to present a counterpoint to this though. Sometimes when you ask someone for help, because you are so competent, they're going to be very flattered and it's actually empowering to them. So you can actually spread empowerment by asking people for help.
Oh, why'd you have to say it like that?
This is a new option. I want to give you a new option here.
Now we need like a damn it, Claire.
Yeah, I think it's for fuck's sake, Claire. I think that's the.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. Oh, boy. Okay. I can see where this podcast is going. I'm pretty sure everybody's going to be loving how uncomfortable I am right now. Let's talk about motivation because in, you know, I haven't read your new book, but I've read sort of some excerpts and I know that in it you talk about motivation and how motivation isn't always what we think it is on the surface. So what do you mean by that? What is the motivation and why doesn't it always look right?
So yeah, there's no class that teaches us about motivation. There's no like required class in school, right? So why would we have this skill to be able to really identify it? So I think a lot of the times we're told what should motivate us and then we try and motivate ourselves with that. And then it doesn't work and we feel like we're broken. But the Enneagram does tell us what motivates us, right? It's our core fear and our core desire together. And that's kind of the engine that's constantly going in the background. But we can look towards higher motivations and that sort of thing to kind of keep from just doing fear-based motivations. We can look at purposeful motivations. We could do all these different things. But why it's important to look at it is because we may have parts of our writing life that we don't feel very motivated to do. We just hate them. They just don't feel good. Maybe we really love writing romance, but we hate marketing, right? So if we know our motivations, we can really see like, where is the romance playing with our motivations? Maybe you're an Enneagram 2 and you enjoy romance because, you know, at the end, like everyone feels like they're worthy of love, right? And that's your core motivation if you're a 2, being worthy of love. So you get to create that in your story. And if that really revs you up and you know that, then you can kind of take that essence and ask yourself, how do I apply this to my marketing, right? Maybe like chasing the money isn't as motivating to me as helping other people feel like they're worthy of love. And how do I spread that through my messaging? And then you can feel more connected to your marketing and it'll fill you up in ways that just being like, hey, buy my book doesn't.
That's really, really interesting. Can you talk a little bit
deeper about those motivations. So I'm assuming that the motivation is the like the anti-fear in essence. So as an eight, I don't like, it's interesting because I don't feel like harm is one. I don't know if that was because of my competition and we're so adept at dealing with pain, but I don't want to be controlled. So like that is like, I definitely have a control problem. I don't want anyone to control me. And therefore the thing that motivates me is to make enough money to be always free, to have physical freedom, mental freedom, financial freedom, everything mm-hmm. freedom. So, and I know the path to that is to have enough money that I can make any decision I need to make. So what, I mean, and does that track? Does that make sense? Like in terms of how the Enneagram works or like, is that, okay, cool. So do you, like, obviously we usually talk about eight and one because that's what we are. Do you, can you talk about another one? Like maybe the fun one. What is that, seven? Is that the
seven? The fun one. Yeah. That's the one that everyone wants to be. They're like, yeah, I think I'm a seven because I really want to have fun. I'm like, if you were a seven, you'd already be having fun.
Yeah.
yeah. So you want me to talk about the seven and motivation, what motivates them?
Yeah.
So for them, it's kind of these options. They want to have options. So they don't want to be trapped in pain and deprivation. That's really what they're afraid of, is that pain. So they kind of see the world on this pleasure pain continuum. And a lot of things are filed under pain, like boredom. Because that's that deprivation, right? So it's a little bit like the eight, but it's not being harmed. It's being trapped in boring shit. So whatever they define that as. So for the seven, you know, their motivation might be, okay, I want to not have writing and marketing take up my life because I have all these other things that I really enjoy. They're called the enthusiast. And so, you know, maybe they want their money to be able to like help them go out for a nice meal or go on a vacation or try a new class. They're kind of the generalists of the Enneagram. So they're going to want to have a lot of stuff in their life that they're doing and experiencing. And now that can get to the point of constant distraction. So then we would have to address that of like, hey, let's find the novel in what's present rather than always thinking ahead. But for them, it may be that their books aren't making the money they need right now to do that. And so maybe they need some other source of income, doing whatever, or, you know, marrying whoever, hey, no judgment here, to be able to put more of their, you know, book royalties towards those kinds of things. So that's going to be very motivating for them. But, you know, that sort of fear of missing out that the sevens have, if that's what's motivating them, then they're going to be doing too much. They're going to go too far with too many novelties, too much spending. And then that can become a problem with that motivation.
So what are some of the wrong motivations that we see, like typically assigned to particular types?
Well, any motivation that's not yours is not going to feed you very much. So that's one thing. But there's also, we have options. So most of us function on a fear motivation, which is really looking at our core of fear and worrying that we're not going to be something. So if that's what's driving us, that fear will constantly run up our cortisol levels. It will keep our heart rate high. It will tell our body that we're in fight or flight. It will make us feel bad about ourselves. It will give us negative emotions, which all kind of feed back into the same process. So over time, that's just not sustainable. But what we can do is we can look toward some of the work we have to do. So there's kind of a lot of intermediate steps, but eventually we can kind of build this purpose about something other than ourselves and let that motivate us. But before we can really do that, we have to be, you know, be a little bit more comfortable that we're okay. So the, you know, the seven, rather than seeking satisfaction, learns that they have all they need to be satisfied in this moment, right? And once you have that need met internally, you're like, this is great. I'm so glad to be here. What can I do for other people? How can I brighten other people's day, right? Because the sevens do that without meaning to, you know, and they can mean to, and then it's extra good. But, you know, it's like we have to kind of the step from fear to sustainability. There are some stepping stones to, you know,
So
to changing that motivation.
Would an eight work towards helping others feel free? Is that kind of what you're saying? Or
yep. Yeah, and empowered. So for the eight, you can kind of look at the like different types of power, right? So there's power over, power with, power to, and empowerment.
Oh my God. So this is why I like motivational speaking.
Yes.
I hate that the Enneagram knows me.
Right. So when an eight is kind of in that fear space, they can end up thinking in terms of power over. Right? What can I control? Who can I control? Like, so that they don't control me. And that's where you get the kind of unhealthy behaviors we sometimes see associated with the eight. But as an eight remembers that they already are in control of themselves internally, no one can control them. Mm-hmm. And they are already free inside. No one can change that. Then that fear starts to start. We take a breath. And then we want to share that, right? We want to let other people know and empower other people that like, you're good exactly as you are. Great. You know, do it. And so that's the change, right? You can feel that in your body. Probably you can kind of like feel the change in your whole system. When you just think about like, I'm already that thing I'm seeking. And now I want to give that to everyone else.
Yeah, right. I'm deeply uncomfortable that my entire Vegas presentation was that.
But that's your gift. So that's exactly what you need to be sharing. You don't need to be sharing other people's gifts. Just keep sharing your gift. And it's going to come naturally. And here's the thing about people's gifts. People write their gifts off immediately because they're easy. They're like, well, everyone, like, duh, that's, of course, people already know that. And it's like, no, people don't already know that. People are not already there. So like, you don't have to go chasing whatever's the hardest because that's probably not your gift. Your gift is easy. And like, that's kind of great.
Oh, man. The boxes this puts me in.
Oh, it's letting you out of the boxes, Sasha. It's letting you out. You put yourself in those boxes.
Oh, dear. All right. Well, okay. So in the book, you also talk about how to like get what you want and how different types pursue that and how that pursuit can be limiting. So does that mean that there's a right way to pursue what we want? And if there isn't a right way, then what do you mean? And how do we pursue what we want?
Okay, so there's not a right way. There's different ways. But with the way that we default to, we can always overdo it. So we want to bring awareness and mindfulness to that pattern of how we're getting what we want and what we are trying to get. And I think that this shows up the most in marketing, because that's really where we're like, okay, we've written the book. That was, you know, kind of a quiet experience. And now it's time to relate to the world. We need to get things from the world, right? So I see this show up a lot. There's no right or wrong way, but if the way we've been trying is overemphasized and we've been only trying that, then we're going to be limited in our results. So we can start to recognize, I've only been trying this. Oh, there are other options, but we don't see those options until we see what we've been doing. So here's the three things that people want. These are the three childhood desires, and they function into adulthood. And that's attention, security, and autonomy. Can you guess which one's yours?
Is it autonomy by any chance?
Yes.
I'm so devastatingly shocked by this news.
Right. So 2, 3, and 4 are attention, 5, 6, 7 are security, and 8, 9, 1 are autonomy. So these are the three things that are kind of functioning, and they each work with our core fear and desire. They're almost these like umbrella categories that the core fear and desire fall under. So there's no conflict there. But they're more general and we can kind of see them. And now in each of these triads, these attention or these, you know, triads of trying to get what we want, each of the three types in that triad is going to try and get it in a different way. So for, you know, well, I'll talk about the three ways. There's assertive, there's compliant, and there's withdrawing. So these are the three ways. And there are sometimes different names for these. Do you have a guess which one's yours?
Yeah. Is it assertive by any chance?
Yes.
That's why I laughed. I was like, for fuck's sake.
Right. So the assertive approach is exactly what it sounds like. It's, you know, sort of going after it. And at the heart of that is that the assertive types don't feel like anyone is going to meet their needs. So they're going to go meet them themselves. So that's, we recognize the assertive type. We know what, we're very familiar with that sort of approach. It's very lauded, right? Go get it, especially, you know, in a system that's, you know, like capitalism is type three, which is also an assertive type. So it's like, go get what you want. It's out there, right? So we're familiar with that. Now, the compliant types try to earn what they want through service and duty and helping others. And so that can be a little overdone if you're not getting back what you're giving out. So the compliant types are a little bit more like they can kind of fill in the energy. If they're around an assertive type, they'll kind of take a step back. If they're around a withdrawing type, they'll go forward and meet that person. So the withdrawing types withdraw into themselves to meet their own needs. So they also don't think that anyone's going to meet their needs, but they're not trying to, they're actually withdrawing into themselves to meet those needs. So they're kind of disconnecting from the world.
So in each group, it is one type associate. Mm-hmm. So would the nine be withdrawing and the one be mm-hmm. compliance? Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. You got it. It's pretty easy to remember once you start to recognize the pattern. So two is attention compliant. Three is attention assertive. Four is attention withdrawing. Five is security withdrawing. Six is security compliant. And seven is security assertive. And then, like you said, with 891. And so when we start to see this show up in marketing, right, you can start to see these patterns. Like sometimes threes will sort of get off the path of like their goal of making money on social media. And the goal will become getting as much attention as possible, which we know those aren't necessarily the same things, right? You can get a lot of likes and shares and make $0. So if the three is out there just like, I'm going to go get the attention I need, and they forget to direct it toward what they're trying to accomplish and sell, that can become a problem. So then it's like, okay, well, let's see, like maybe you're advertising too many products at once and it's overwhelming people with that assertive approach that you just can't get enough of their attention for all that. So let's look at, okay, let's withdraw a little bit, or we can look at a compliant approach. Like, how would you bring in a more compliant? Like, let's do a little bit more service for the community so they don't feel like you're just trying to suck them dry, you know, that sort of thing. We can make adjustments. And it's not that assertive is bad. It's just that assertive can be a lot for people, and it can wear you out if you are, especially if you are trying to make something happen in a space where it's just tougher to get results.
Okay. So what does healthy assertive look like? Or what does healthy, it was assertive, compliant, and withdrawal. Can you, can those three be healthy?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just you bring awareness to it and you start to notice, right? So like a Enneagram 4, which is all about, you know, they are the attention withdrawing. A lot of the times I work with fours on the marketing and I'm like, listen, it's okay to not be out there hammering people all the time with what you want. It's okay not to be out there, you know, giving away freebies like it's your job when really you're not making any money. Like, you don't have to take the compliant approach or the assertive approach, but maybe like, let's look at your withdrawing approach and see if, because sometimes the fours will withdraw hoping that someone pursues them to give them the attention they need. So that can be this, the four may withdraw and hope they're going to be discovered, and then they aren't because there are all these other people asking for attention, right? So it's like, okay, well, it's okay to withdraw from time to time. It's okay to not take these other approaches, but where can you kind of step forward, like, and meet your needs a little bit more. Tell people about your book. Let them know, because deep down, it's like, you know, you wrote something, and it's probably unique if you're a four. It's probably not fitting neatly into a genre, but there are people who need this. Mm. Let's be aware of this pattern of withdrawing and counteract it just a little bit to go find those people.
Okay. Oh, so interesting when it's not about me.
I know, everyone else is so screwed up, right?
It's not that. It's just that it hurts every time you start talking about an eight. I feel deeply uncomfortable. Speaking of feeling uncomfortable, my favourite topic, rest. So you also talk about rest in the book and that rest doesn't look the same for all Enneagram types. So let's hurt me. Talk about a few examples of what rest might look like for the different types.
Sure. Okay. So when I look at rest, I like to, and I'm, when I just feel like I'm tired, I probably need something. I probably need to slow down a little bit and refill some well. I like to look at the centers to see what well I need to refill. So the centers are the head, the heart, and the body. And so sometimes my mind is tired and I need to go do something restful for that. Sometimes my heart is tired and I need to go do something restful for that. And sometimes my body's tired, you know, maybe I didn't sleep well. Maybe I ate crap for the last week, which is the case. I was traveling, you know, so it's like, what do I need to do to rest that? So rest is not necessarily.
How do you know? How do you know which one you need to?
Yeah. So you can use all kinds of data, like looking at what have I been, which one have I been using a lot? If I'm sitting at the computer and doing deep work for a while, my brain probably needs a rest. If I am dealing with something in my own life that's a lot of emotional stuff, or I've just done some like coaching calls with people who are offloading a lot of emotional stuff, then probably I need to rest my heart a little bit. And then if I look back and I go, well, I just did a workout yesterday or just gave blood or something. Yeah, I probably need to go take a nap or, you know, eat some healthy food or something like that. So looking at sort of what you have been doing can be a clue to that. Rest almost never actually looks like laying around on the couch and doing nothing, because that's only if you're on bed rest, if your body needs rest, right? A lot of the times people do that because it's a distraction from the things that they don't want to look at.
Right? Oh my God. Before you even start talking about the types, I already know why my favorite thing to do is my favorite thing to do.
Tell me.
Well, of course it's travel, because it's the most freedom thing I can fucking do. It's so annoying. And that's why, like, during COVID, I was so fucking drained because I couldn't travel. I couldn't go anywhere. I felt completely trapped. So like, I've just come back from Venice, and like, it just like that ability to go anywhere and do anything and see, like, I never feel more free than when I'm not in the country. I don't want to do it all the time because it gets exhausting in the opposite way, but also like, of all the things, there is nothing that gives me energy other than going and traveling. And the only second to that is reading a book, because I'm traveling in my brain. Oh my God. And literally, I was just listening to you talk and I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. So yes. I'm really sorry that I've interrupted you, but like, I know, not at all. And I had to share it.
I love epiphanies. That's why we're here. They're liberating. Shake off the old stuff. Oh, so yeah, God. But that brings it. Brings us to a point about rest, which is a lot of the times what we need rest from is our overused patterns. And so just doing something different can feel restful, right? So getting yourself out of a place where you're thinking the same thing all the time, where those beliefs are there, challenging your beliefs a little bit is going to be nice, especially for an eight. But just seeing things that are different.
Challenging my beliefs.
Yeah.
Oh, so that's why I like strengths coaching, because the challenges are very like foundation. That's why I like this.
Maybe that's why you had me on a second time.
Don't challenge me. Rub the hands. Do you know, growing up, it was like, I used to get so sad because nobody would ever have an argument with me.
Right. And that is like
have a heated debate. Like, tell me something interesting that I disagree with, for God's sake. Like,
right. Let me defend my autonomy. I'm dying here.
Oh my God, this is horrible. I love this so much.
So yeah, I mean, rest can look like a lot of things. Sometimes it's just like, if we've overused one center, we go use another. So if my brain is tired, maybe I just need to go for a walk and use my body a little bit, right? And my brain is not required for that other than like, don't walk into traffic, you know? So my brain could kind of do its own thing, restore itself on the back, you know, in the back of my mind and that sort of thing. Or, you know, if my heart is tired, maybe I need to go have coffee with a friend and talk about something. Or I need to go get a hard workout until I cry, you know, like something. Or sometimes if your heart's tired, you just need to cry. You know, I love a good cry. I think a good cry is very healthy. And if you can work it into your schedule, highly recommend. But, you know, so it's kind of like, okay, this pattern, I've been trying to force this pattern that's not working for me anymore. And I just want to do something else. You know, I just want to try something else. So I feel a little, so I can kind of recognize that there are more parts of me than this box I keep putting myself in. And that can be very, very restful.
Are there typical types of rest that you see certain types doing? So like as a one, what is a one's favorite type of rest? Like, is it connected to the desires? For example.
Yes, I think so. And I think that it also, the same activity can be done with different intentions and have different results.
Interesting.
So for me, cleaning is very restful. As a one, cleaning, getting organization to my space. If things are really disorganized, I am burning fuel. It's just hard for me to function. And I need that vacation of something being clean and my space being organized. So then I can think better. I can feel better, you know? But if I'm cleaning because, and my thoughts are, you're such a slob, right? Get your shit together, Claire. Or people are coming over and they're going to think you're a complete disaster. Like, then that's not super restful, right? That's a pattern. That's an ugly pattern that I can kind of get anywhere else, right? I can have my inner critic berate me doing anything and then it stops being restful. So it's really about changing that pattern. So my thinking pattern from you're a complete slob and that's why you need to clean to, oh, it's such a relief. This is such a nice and loving thing to do for yourself because you function better. Everything's easier when things are clean, right? So the intention behind it and the thoughts we have, it's really about those patterns and where we can find some break from whatever patterns are keeping us stuck.
I find this so interesting. Like one of the things that I've been working on in both strengths and therapy is resilience. And I know that you talk about this in connection with the Enneagram. So how can we look at resilience through the lens of the Enneagram? And what does it look like for different types?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so yeah, resilience is definitely something that I had to work on back in like 2016. My anxiety was getting a little crazy. Not that anything big happened in the US in November 2016 or anything, and then proceeded to happen to us for the next 4 years. But
I think this is something in the community as well, though, don't you think? Like our resilience has traditionally been quite low, and we're trying to elevate that.
Absolutely.
Now.
Right. So I was working on this for different reasons, but one of the things that I learned that is the most useful tool is that we have already been resilient to get to this point. It's important to recognize I am a resilient person and then recognize what it was that got you there. So when I look at my history, I have fallen on my ass more times than I can count. I think we all have at this point, right? But we don't necessarily spend the time and the energy to look back and say, how did I get back up and deconstruct that? What was it that motivated me to get back up? Because that was pretty bad. And yet here I am, you know? So I think that when we start to identify what it was that got us back up, then we can go, oh, that's a new tool. Right? I maybe had that tool this whole time, but I didn't recognize it. I didn't know that I could use it. Now I have this tool. So if something happens, I already know I have this tool to get back up. I'm good at getting back up. Look at all this other evidence, right? So we want to build our awareness of the evidence of our past resilience. That's a start. But then when we look at the Enneagram, there are these things that we will get knocked down and we just can't seem to stay down for long because these forces, these energies start to get going in us. So for the one, purpose, and moral courage, right? I have a sticky note that says, what the fuck else are you going to do with your life? And that is, it's like, yeah, I guess what else? Like, I know what I want to do. My purpose is I want to like leave the world better than it was. And this moral courage of like, there's just some shit out there that's wrong. And like, I am the person who knows, who is willing to get out there and confront it and stir some shit up if I have to, right? Twos, they have this deep sense of love for others and compassion. And if given enough time, it will start to emerge and it will get them back up. Threes have vision and they have drive. Sometimes this is almost like a hunger, right? It's like, you just can't, it's like, I can't sit still anymore. I have to go do something, right? I have this vision of like how I can move forward. And once that starts to emerge, the three is going to get back up, right? And so these drives, I will just interrupt myself here and say these drives aren't super intense and obvious, but when we start to look for them, they're there for us. So the four has this inspiration and this need to express themselves. So even if you get, you know, your writing gets shit on, you're going to go, okay, one day you're going to go, I just can't hold it in anymore. I have to express this. Fives have curiosity and a need for discovery that will get them back up eventually, slowly, bit by bit. Sixes have a sense of loyalty and service to other people. You see a lot of sixes in the military because, you know, talk about needing resilience, right? This is this thing that drives them to go into the military. Sevens, possibilities and novelty, too good to ignore, to not get back up for. Eights have strength, like a deep amount of strength, and stubbornness. And stubbornness is, in my opinion, a virtue. just saying, like, hell, I'm going to sit here and not get up and do something, right? That is a source of fuel. I think it's really important that eights recognize that that's really valuable. And the nines have this sense of harmony and this perspective. So it may feel really bad to a nine, but nines have this amazing ability to see how it all kind of works together, to zoom out and to be like, I can do this. Like, I'm important here and I'm a part of this and I am integral to the functioning of everything. It's time to get back up and use my gifts. So those are the sources that you can kind of look to, but to be fair, sometimes when we get knocked down, we just need to lick our wounds for a while.
So I want to kind of explore this a little bit deeper. So the first part of it was saying, look back and see what the tools are. So can we maybe talk about that in practice? Like, mm-hmm. How would I go back and pick out the tool that helped me get back up, mm-hmm. or how do I identify that? Because I don't know, I struggle sometimes with that self-awareness, and like, so I can tell you, okay, well, I really struggled for 8 years in my corporate day job, and I cried every day for 6 weeks, but I just kept going and kept going and kept going and kept going. Mm-hmm. Is it just stubbornness? Like, is that my tool? Or like, is there another way to look for a action that I took? Or I don't know.
I think you had strength, and in that case your strength came from the reason you were able to keep going was probably in large part to the, owed to the fact that you did cry, right?
Yeah, and I had a goal, which was the writing, because I was already writing at that point.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you were able to be, to allow that sort of vulnerability to strengthen you rather than, take you down. Because sometimes that vulnerability can feel like a weakness, but just recognizing that little bit of vulnerability was making you stronger, because it was helping you, it was giving compassion to yourself, it was allowing you to complete some stress cycles so you didn't overdo it. And it allowed you to go long enough to recognize that this was not for you, your corporate job was not for you, right? So resilience in that place was the compassion you needed, the strength to have that compassion for yourself and recognize it and to get yourself to a better place, to last long enough to get yourself to a better place. I mean, that's a lot of fortitude.
Yeah, it's interesting because I really struggle to see how, like, don't get me wrong, I value being strong almost above everything, but I struggle to see how and this is ironic, but how being strong is a strength in terms of, I don't know, like, I don't know, because obviously, like, I'll just keep going. And I get that. I think it's because I understand it in terms of a competition, Clifton strengths, mm-hmm. strength, in that I know I can endure pain like no one else. I will just mm-hmm. keep going. I got limbs hanging off. I got blood mm-hmm. pouring out. I'm just going to keep going, right?
It's just a flesh wound.
Yes, a flesh wound. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think it's because the
Enneagram... How do you not see that as resilience? Is it because it's easy for you? Because it comes naturally?
Oh man, yeah, probably. To be honest, it's probably,
yeah,
it's,
I mean, like, you can hold on long thing. Enough until you get somewhere else, until you get to a better place. Not yeah. everyone can do that,
right? Okay, that is news to me. Okay.
Oh yeah, no, not everyone can do that. Not everyone is like, it's fine, we're just gonna keep going. And I will say that, like, going despite needing rest may also lead to other things, but you can value that in the times when you need it, and then just make sure that you're not pushing in times where you don't need to push.
Yeah, yeah. And that is something that I have to learn through strengths, I think, and not wanting to burn out and allowing myself to get like a toenail over the precipice and go, whoa, let's reverse real fucking quick. Oh dear. Okay. I think that is probably all of my main questions. Is there anything else you think that maybe I should have asked around this and around your new book? Like, anything that you're deeply passionate about that we haven't covered? Oh, what man. Is the one thing that you want people to go away with, like, once they finish reading your book, that is different to the thing that they went away with at the end of your first book?
Mm-hmm. That you probably already have most of the tools you need to do this in the long run. And the ones that you don't have yet are, you can develop them. But it's really about learning to recognize how many tools you have and getting to know yourself better, because you cannot have a sustainable author career if your patterns of thinking, feeling, and behaving are unsustainable.
Okay. And that is when we turn our strength into a weakness, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. When we overdo it, a lot of the times, the patterns that used to work for us, we can thank them. They worked for us. They got us to a point. And then a lot changes in the situation, the environment, and those patterns stop being effective. Maybe we've just used them out. When they stop being effective, our tendency is to hit the accelerator on them, right? If they worked before, if I do them more, they will work again. And hitting the accelerator on those patterns is the way that we run the car off the cliff, right? When really what we need to do is take a moment. There's no emergencies in publishing. If a tourniquet's not involved, it's not an emergency. There's no emergencies in publishing that don't allow us a moment to stop and think and be mindful and say, what are some options that I haven't been seeing? Because I have these blinders on with my usual operating procedures. What can I do instead of hitting that accelerator?
Do you think that there are certain business models in the industry, and this I haven't prepared you for, but I'm just interested in your thoughts. Do you think there are certain business models that are more aligned to particular types of the Enneagram?
Yes, I would say so. And it, again, it's like you may see more sixes and collaborative, sort of like co-ops or co-writing situations is very comfortable for sixes. Eights, maybe not so much. you know,
yeah.
Eights might have people working under them. Sure. Mm. That's comfortable.
Yeah. I'm very comfortable with that.
Yeah, you're going to have like threes are going to be much more of kind of a, they may have a team, but it's more of a one man show in the presentation. And there's going to be, generally that model is going to be focused more on the quantity of books. If you're a three.
Oh, because it's achievement.
So yeah, it's achievement. And the easiest, the most low hanging fruit of achievement is numerics, like numeric metrics, like number of books, number of sales, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So a two would be in the nonfiction sphere almost.
Possibly nonfiction. I see a lot in romance because it's this sort of compassionate, everyone finds love and is loved. But the twos, I have to say, stop giving away free shit. That model is very alluring to the two, to be like loss leader. I'm just going to keep giving people stuff. But it's like, you're giving more than you're getting when you give a free book, right? Free books don't convert very well to the next book. If they did, I'd say, yeah, sure, this works. But we know the conversion rates on like first one free to the second book, it's so low. And so the twos end up burning energy that way. Because they're expecting more back, right? And they're like, one day they go, I've given away 10,000 books and I've had two people pick up my next book.
Is there like, if we picked like three of the types, is there an action that each of those three types could do to make themselves and their businesses more sustainable that's like unique to that type?
Yeah, probably. Do we want to pick three types?
One, an eight, and a four.
Sure. Yeah.
Just
randomly. So if you're a one thing you can do to make your business a little bit more sustainable is reevaluate your standards of quality. Because ones use quality as armor, quality and perfection as armor. So, if you are doing four passes of revisions, maybe what if you did three, right? That can really help speed things along for a one, just to have more output, because ones get caught in the perfectionism and, well, I've got to have the highest quality standards because I want to be above reproach and because criticism hurts so bad for ones. And so they want to criticize themselves so much that they find a way to be above everyone else's criticism. So looking at those standards and working on that inner critic, that would be the thing that is really going to allow you to get in the flow state more often. You're going to enjoy your writing, which is much more sustainable. You're going to be able to put books out. You may need fewer editors. Sometimes ones run it by like three editors for every book, and that is just not financially sustainable a lot of the times. So kind of looking in that area for the ones.
Let's do five, because we've already talked about four a little bit.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about five.
Okay. Yeah. So for five, I would say addressing your belief that you have to know everything and you have to have all the skills yourself, because if you outsource to other people, they're going to take something from you. So the fives are looking at, they want to be capable and competent, and they're worried about being incapable and incompetent, because what happens is the fives are very aware of their sort of battery, and they are almost allergic to encroachment from other people. So fives tend to end up isolated and doing things all on their own. So when there's a new part of their business that they need, that needs to be done, they want to learn it because they want to be capable. So they spend all this time learning these things that they don't have to learn. You don't have to know everything, fives. You just have to know someone who knows it, and then you don't have to know it. So that's why there's this benefit to getting to know other people, because it actually saves you a lot of energy and you can focus more on your writing and less on, okay, well, now I also need to become an expert in Amazon ads. Maybe you don't. Maybe you need to hire someone who's an expert already, right? That could be a more, you know, beneficial use of the energy that you have. So for fives, I would say, look at that. Look at ways that you don't have to know things, but you can know people who know things. And then for eights, look at the ways you've kind of made your business an island and think of the ways that you could start to empower other people around you to help with it so that you can be compassionate to yourself when you need to go take a break or go travel, and you can do those things, and that you, but make sure, you know, that you, these are people that you feel comfortable being vulnerable around. These are your people, right? So eights aren't necessarily an island, as they don't trust anyone, but they have, these are my people, they're under my wing, I will die for them, right? So try and find some people in the industry who you feel that way about and work with them and offload a little bit more. Sometimes strength in leadership is giving that power to, you know, empowering other people.
Okay, well, this is the Rebel Author Podcast. So tell me about a time you unleashed your inner rebel.
Okay, well, I tend to unleash my inner rebel when I think that something is just unacceptable. And I kind of stop caring who is going to be upset with me speaking that. When I can clear out the clouds and my moral judgment is like, yes, this is right. And it's not for me. It's just the right thing to do. It's not self-righteous. It's just righteous. I can kind of end up on a thing. I wouldn't call it a crusade, but, you know, I speak out a lot. So I did that a few years ago, talking about sort of the creeps and predators in this industry. And that upset a lot of people whose opinion I don't care about. And then lately, kind of the thing that I'm doing that's rebellious is that I'm not letting people exploit my expertise, which is, you know, if someone wants me to come fly out somewhere and speak on stage, you got to pay me. You got to pay me. And that is rebellious in this industry because a lot of people have accepted a pretty iffy standard. So, and also on the back channels, I mean, the men are getting paid for this work and the women are expected to do it for free. So fuck that. That's where my inner rebel comes out when we see these double standards. And you know, my feeling is if you think I'm an expert, pay me. If you don't think I'm an expert, don't put me on stage, you know? So I feel like there's some simplicity in that. And that is unfortunately kind of a rebellious position to take. I've pissed off some people.
It is. But I also think it's a very needed standard in the industry. Like, I think too many of us have given away too much for too long. And it's not that we should never do that. I think there is a time and place to give back for free. And, mm-hmm. you know, we've all mm-hmm. done a lot of that. But also, like, we only have one life, and like, expertise deserves to be paid for, you know, because they got it through right. hard work. So yeah, I absolutely yeah. love that.
Yeah, I'm fine doing things for free when it's because I care a lot about it, but I also care a lot about everything I do, and I got to make some money.
Exactly. Well, tell everyone about your Kickstarter. Tell everyone where they can find out more about you, your books, services, anything else that you'd like to add.
All right. Yeah, my Kickstarter is for my book, Sustain Your Author Career. So this is the follow-up. If you read Reclaim Your Author Career, that's about sort of building this foundation and sort of being mindful in how you align your career with you. And this book is about, okay, now that you've done that, how do you troubleshoot the blocks that come up? How do you keep it sustainable? How do you not fall into the traps that just living in the world can sometimes set for you? So that Kickstarter is running through March 29th, I think. I should know. I'm the one in charge.
Well, it will be live when this goes out as well.
Awesome. Yes. And you can go to kickffs.com and that will take you to the Kickstarter. And for everything else I do, my Liberated Writer course, my Liberated Writer retreat, first of all, you can get all of my offerings through my Kickstarter this month, and you get them for a little bit cheaper and you get a book along with it if you're interested in that. But outside of that, if you listen to this sometime later on down the road, ffs.media has all of my stuff, including my fiction, if you want to read some irreverent fiction.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for your time today. And of course, a giant thank you to all of the show's listeners and all of the show's patrons. If you would like to get early access to all of the episodes, you can do so by visiting patreon.com/SashaBlack. I'm Sasha Black. You are listening to Claire Taylor, and this was the Rebel Author Podcast.
That's it from me this week. Next week, I'm going to be joined by Michael Chatfield, and we're talking all about how to write lit RPG. So join me next week for that.
Don't forget to tune in and subscribe on your podcatcher. And when you have a moment, please leave a review.